She's feisty, she's funny, and she tells it like it is. Get ready for Empower Readings with Corby Mitlide. What are your opportunities right now? What are the possibilities? Ask Corby and cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. Here's your host, Corby Mitlide.
There. This is the show that you should have heard last week, but thanks to Mercury Retrograde Theater, we were here and you were there and never the twain were going to meet. So we're here this week and I'm delighted to bring back Greg Milk. Greg is going to be one of our regular folks because he's just too damn much fun to talk to. Greg is a certified option process mentor, and last time he was on we talked about the option process, the gift of a question, how to look at your life in a fabulous, questioning, non-judgmental way. Well, once you learn that, where do you go with it? One of the best places to go is creating a new family in the easiest, best way possible for everybody. So tonight, we're going to be talking to him a little bit about adoption, which he and his wonderful wife, Isis, know a lot about, having brought two kids into their family. So, Greg, my brother in questions, it is so good to see you back.
It's good to be back, and I'm sorry about the Mercury retrograde. I'm glad to be here. I'm excited and anticipatory. So,
okay. So now this is going to be a thing where I just do a lot of questioning because I never had kids. I didn't want kids. I have remained simply the biggest kid in the room. You, on the other hand, are dad cat times four. So talk to me first about what was it about kids that you knew you wanted to make kids a part of your life existence?
I have to be honest and say that, you know, things like Disney movies and all kinds of stuff that you see on television that, you know, I don't have to even go into that. Like, there's all kinds of preconceived notions as to what, you know, having kids is about or going to be and who you're going to do it with and all of that. But I have to say my father, Tommy R. Mills, Thomas Redden Mills, has to be the funnest man I've ever met in my life. My dad is the funnest man. And I say as if he's still alive. He passed away in 2006. I'm still churning over a lot of things that he's told me and said and experiences. I think about him and I feel like he's still alive. And I'm not, you know, I'm not joshing. But my dad, when I used to watch The Cosby Show, it was like, oh, that's my father. Like, when I see Bill Cosby on The Cosby Show, and everybody wanted to be that, like, I'm not exaggerating, that was my father. You wanted somebody that was selfless and actually valued you and your thoughts and the things that you deemed were important. He made that look really, really, like, natural without pressing. I felt very accepted and very loved and filled by him. And so I think I was around 14 or 15 years old, and I think I told my dad, I was 14 or 15, and I told him, I said, I hope that I can be as much fun to my kids as you are to me. And my, you know, he had a tear in his eye. He was like, you saying that means I did a good job. You know, you saying that to where I've poured into you to where you want to overflow it into somebody else, another human being, then I did my job. And he was a velvet brick. So he is my inspiration in the name of fatherhood. My father is my inspiration in the name of fatherhood. He used to tell me these funny jokes, like, you want help with your math? I'm like, yeah, I want help with my math. He's like, how many kids does it take to totally turn somebody's life upside down? How's that for a math problem? One, just one kid, you know? You're that kid. You flipped me all upside down. So,
but that was, you have a great father-son experience. You had a real good model.
Yeah.
When did you feel you were ready to take on that role? How old were you?
Well after, and I must have been in my 20s, because late 20s. being married, and I really did understand. My father did tell me, he's like, whenever you're ready to pull over to the side of the road of life, get married and have children. And that's really wise. You know what I'm saying? And he wasn't saying that in like a smart mouth way or like a, you know, kind of a vindictive way. He's like, when you're riding by yourself on a motorcycle, when you're ready to like move slower and pull over to the side of the road of life, get married. And so I was in the Navy for 7 years plus. So it wasn't until I was 28. And I encourage people, like, understand that that's really serious. Like this whole thing of like getting married as soon as you get out of high school and, or graduate from college, as just as a personal person, from one human being to another human being, speaking to a mass of people, please have as much you time as you can. Love yourself till you're ready to overflow into somebody else, not just a spouse, but also the overflow needs to flow into your spouse as well as these little people, you know? Okay. So I was in my late 20s.
All right. And was this with ISIS?
Yes, it was with ISIS. I met her in San Francisco.
So she looks at you and says, "The bunny bought it, honey." First time.
When she brought it up, I still thought it was too early. We were married. I think we got married in like 1998, and I want to say it was like maybe 99. Or 2000, she brought it up. And at the time, every single time that she's brought up about bringing more children into it, I've always with kind of like slowness, you know, with slowness. I'm not a quick jump on like, hey, let's populate, you know, and I'm not, I feel like, you know, and that's another thing my dad used to say, never complain about what you allow. So you bringing kids into the planet, don't complain about them when you bring them in. You know what I'm saying? So when are you ready? And I like the question that you're asking. When was I actually ready to pour into these people? So, yeah, we were married a year, and that was when we conceived Trinity, the first child. Now, Trinity was born, and we later found out, you know, that she had autism. And Caleb came a couple years later. After we were kind of going through and dealing with that. But when Caleb was conceived was the time when ISIS and I began talking about adoption. And we don't have any problem having any kids. She's very fertile, you know, no problems at all. I mean, you know, we're very big rhythm method people, you know what I'm saying, and very sincere about the rhythm cycle and everything. So none of the kids were accidents. They're very intentional. You just, you know, just kind of pull the dam down and, you know, go ahead and do what you got to do. When we started talking about adoption, now this is where it gets, and I'm prefacing this for the listeners that ISIS and I don't think anything about anybody else. We're thinking about us as a couple. Okay. So I'm putting that preamble on it. ISIS and I are people that are into pro-life. Like, you know, we feel like there's many alternatives to when a person gets pregnant as opposed to abortion. That's just us personally. I don't judge anybody that makes their own choices with their own body. I'm talking about in the four walls of our home. This is just something that we, you know, this is the way we get down, is that we think that there's alternative ways. And even as Christians, you know, we don't picket, you know, abortion clinics, and we don't like, we do stuff. We actually do stuff. So our way of giving back is going and adopting a child, or going and getting a child that's a teenage girl or somebody that's pregnant that doesn't want it and then want their child, and say to them, hey, why not come live with us and you can have the baby here. We'll keep the baby and you can stay with us if you want to, or you can go back on your life and get your life restarted again, but we'll take the child. Like, that's the activity that we think about. That's our way of saying that we're pro-life people.
So you put your money where your mouth is the old expression. You don't just say, well, you shouldn't do that, but no, don't ask me to adopt.
Right.
So I totally honor what you're doing.
That's completely what I'm saying. And then again, if I really don't want to offend anybody that's out there, that's just us saying, this is how we give back in the name of like alternative, you know, ways. So that's what we did. We talked about it, and our hearts were very similar in the vision. And again, it's not like we went to adopt because we can't have kids, because we can. But that was just our reasonable act of service, you know, to go do that.
So the first person you were adopting, okay? You already had two kids that were autistic. Were you already in the Sunrise program with them at that point?
I think so. Yes. We had already kind of started. Yeah.
So you had already been taught to look at the world asking questions, non-judgmental, go for the happy point.
Correct. Correct. And I would like to say, go ahead.
Yeah.
I think that the Option Institute definitely highlighted and solidified what we were already, what her and I already had inside us as far as our hearts were concerned. I see that the Option Institute in that regards concerning like adoption was kind of an accessory to a tool we were already using, making it longer. You know what I'm saying? If you have a hammer and you want to reach really high to get the nail in, there might be an accessory to make the hammer longer. And I would say the Option Institute was extending our hammer, so to speak. And so we had that acceptance and welcoming and all of that kind of things already kind of in action in our lives. And we began the paperwork and, you know, we went down to this Sierra adoption. And it's easier, you know, it's easier than people think to do. You know what I'm saying? It's long. It's not instant. It's not like going to Walmart where you just pick up a kid. Like, it's about the same amount of time that it takes. Yeah, you know, it takes about the same amount of time as it is to be pregnant. If you do all your paperwork, like when they ask you to do it, you can have a child in 9 months. If you actually do like your fingerprinting, background check, CPR class, you know, home study, they come to your house and make sure that your, you know, your house is safe and stuff. And they drop in every now and again to make sure that everything is what you say it is. But outside of 9 months, you know, you can have a child. They don't let you see the child until all your paperwork is done. Until all your paperwork is done, and they're very protective, understandably so, with the children. Amani was 8 when she came to live with us. Our first daughter that we ever, the first person we ever adopted was 8 years old, not a baby.
What had you adopting her? What was the thing that put on the light bulb with you and I that said, now is the time to adopt?
I think because around the time that we were kind of doing the things and we were learning about the social interactions kind of necessary for autism, and other than, we also kind of thought other than the mom and dad, you know, people, the mom and dad relationship, like some playmates. And so we didn't know if Caleb had autism yet or not. So Caleb was kind of being conceived at the time. And he showed up, but Amani came before Caleb was born. So we were thinking about a really cool person to interact as well with Trinity. So on top of what our vision of, we already had a vision of adoption, but it just so happened that the vision of adoption did play into the fact that we had an autistic child. So we probably would have always adopted, you know, before, whether Trinity was typical or not. But that was an enhancing factor that, yo, you know, Trinity, is there going to be an adult that is going to be able to take care of Trinity if we die, you know, like a sibling, you know what I'm saying? So there's a whole lot of back scratching that goes on us giving the life and love to a person that needs it. And also them being a part of our loving family, pouring into them where they want to pour into their brother and sister, you know, and it works out really well. Like Amani loves Trinity and Caleb. And I forget a lot of times that she's adopted. I look at this 18-year-old, she's 18 now. I look at her and I'm just like, man, how come I can't remember when she was born? I'm like, oh yeah, I wasn't there. Like, we didn't know her when she was born.
Now, at 8 years old,
uh-huh,
you know, she had a good brain and she was smart. Did you talk to her about the kind of life she was going to have and what her sister was like and find out if she wanted to buy into this?
Yes.
Or was it a kind of given?
No, we asked her. We kind of we said this is kind of what we're working with, and she's 8, and of course a child that's 8 years old, you know, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, you know what I mean? And so there is a little give and take of that. But we also at the same time did not get her specifically for that. We got her so we could love her, but we were saying to her very elementary ways that we plan to love everybody here. We would love to participate in a love relationship with you as our daughter, and, you know, not as a visitor. We want you to be here. You know, it wasn't even a foster care kind of a concept. We were like, yo, we didn't try the shoes on. We want the shoe. So come live, you know what I'm saying, with us. But we should warn you, you know, you're 8 years old. Your daughter, I mean, your sister has special needs. And she was very interested in that. And she was like, well, what's wrong with her? And, you know, we were like, oh, well, she has what's called autism. And we explained it to her. And she began to kind of cry when we explained it to her. And she was like, I don't ever want anybody to hurt her or make fun of her. Like, she became very possessive and very like, you know, that's my chick. So it worked itself out. And even as she's here, you know, as she has grown, we don't make her watch the kids. You know what I'm saying? We don't make her watch her sister. We do it unless, and we ask her if, like, yo, are you able to help? You know what I'm saying? Out. So that's something very, very sincere that we're very sincere about, is making sure that the special needs of the child we've created do not bleed over too much into the life of a typical developing child. You can't go out. Okay. You can't go hang out with your friends because of your autistic sister. You know what I mean?
Okay. So Trinity is, Amani is now 18. Right. How old is Trinity?
She's 12 now.
And how old is Caleb?
He's 8.
And the new little schnut, Special K.
Yeah, come on.
You got like a spread here. Now, what is it about Kamal that all of a sudden your little adoption alarm bell went, oh, ding, ding, ding on this boy?
Well, the company that we went through is called the Black Adoption Agency. And when Amani turned 18 years old, they do all this paperwork where they kind of check in the fact that she's 18. She's still your daughter, but they kind of close out, you know, all this stuff. And they're just talking to us, you know what I mean? And, you know, we have, like, you're right, we have a lot of kids, you know what I'm saying? We got two special needs kids, and, you know, we got this 18-year-old who, by the way, has gone through her share. I mean, and let me just, as a side note, I'm pushing pause on that before we go to Kamal. Amani, adopting is not like Anne of Green Gables, okay? It's not like that. It might be, I mean, it's like a Halley's Comet opportunity if it is. If God decides to do something strange and give you an Anne of Green Gables kind of a situation where the child is so grateful and, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you woke me up. You know, if that happens, Merry Christmas, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, we've been around the block and back and to the moon and to the west side of Pluto and back with Amani, and it's been a joyful, painful ride, as children can be. Normal, typically developing children. Like, I even make a joke, like, we have two special needs kids, but we also have an 18-year-old or teenager that we don't know what's wrong with her, you know what I'm saying? But she's a typical teenager that climbs down the window lattice and sneaks out and goes and does stuff, you know what I'm saying? And where have you been? You're making me crazy. What's your special need? How come you're not diagnosed? So, at the end...
That's the kind of thing we're going to be talking about in the second half of the show, is the fact that it is not like Anne of Green Gables. It is not, you know, pound puppies with two legs.
No.
It's reality built.
Yeah.
So really, that's why, but before we get to the break, I want to introduce everybody in the mix.
Yeah.
So that's why I was going to Kareem around now.
Well, cool. So, Kamal, yeah, after we got the paperwork for Amani when she was 18, that was when the light kind of kicked on a little bit, where they were like, oh, and I don't think they were trying to be funny, but they were like, you know, she just got a phone call about this family and this kind of break in the thing, and they showed us his picture, and we were like, wow, like, no, that's kind of cool, you know, that's a nice little kid, you know. And it's difficult when you see those books of full of kids, when you see those books of kids that need homes. I mean, wow, it's really, really like something. But after the lady left, Isis and I were kind of talking, and it sounded crazy. Some people call it the peace that surpasses your understanding, that guides you in truth. And there was a piece that I had, there was a piece that she had, and we were kind of like, not really, like, we're kind of skirting around it. It's like, let me ask you something. She's like, yeah. I was like, what do you think about when, you know, when Jacqueline came over? She's like, I was thinking about that too. And It's just weird. We got so much on our plate right now, and it doesn't make any sense. But can't get him out of our head. And so he's like, I don't know. Like, we can't turn back, but let's go get that dude. You know what I mean? Let's go get him. Yeah, let's go get him. And it's been powerful. It is powerful. And also, too, there's something redemptive in the fact that he's typically developing. We didn't go get him because he was normal. We got him because we fell in love with him, but just actually understanding and learning what a toddler is like that's typically developing is such a new gift for us all over again. Like, what we're experiencing with this boy that's chatty, you know, we joke around and call him the new guy, the new employee. You know, he's all excited about everything, and he wants to, color, green, purple, hey, let's have a meeting, hey, let's hug, hey, let's talk, hey, let's, and, like, we've been with autism for so long, we're just kind of like, where are the batteries, like, where's the off button on this kid, like, where's the off switch?
Now, what it sounds like, in the series that I wrote, ElfQuest, there was a thing about what they called recognition, soul meets soul when eyes meet eyes, and I have a feeling that that's kind of what happened with you guys and the new guys. There was this instant click and lock recognition. We belong to each other. We just didn't happen to come into the parking lot at the same time.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
So here we are. You've got an 18-year-old and you've got your two special needs kids and you've got little Mr. Motormouth here.
Yeah.
Now the key is you've got four extraordinarily wonderful, different kids.
Yeah.
So what we're going to be talking about is how do you get everybody on the same page. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with competition or fights or whatever? How do you, I want to say, like, smooth over the idea adopted versus blood-born out in public? Those are all the kinds of things that so many families have difficulties with because they don't have the option point of view.
Right.
They are not as, I think, self-aware as you and Isis have come to be. So that's all the kind of thing that I want to discuss. Now, before we go to break, if you are as fascinated with Greg and his story as I am, you are probably going to want to talk to this dude. Hmm. Not only if you've got questions about your own kids or your adoption adventure, Greg is also someone who is a brilliant juice meister. If you are looking for doing things like juice fasting or learning about the nutrition when you kick out everything but the good stuff, and if you are fascinated by the idea of going through life as a happy Martian detective, as I say, Greg is your man.
That's
so, Greg, where are they going to find you for all this stuff, you encyclopedia, you?
Absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt. Friend me on Facebook. Like, I want, before people go to my website, I want to actually, like, have a relationship actually with people. And I'm on Facebook as Greg Milk. Get me there, and when I meet you and I add you, I walk you through everything that you need after that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm stuttering. My website is thisislifesupport.com. Or you can even get me at, you know, it's the Schedulista, which is spelled S-C-H-E-D-U-L-I-S-T-A. This is Life Support and Schedulista. You put those two things in and you'll be able to have, we'll be able to meet and connect on a personal or even like business kind of a level, professional level. I love to like walk with people and talk with them about stuff, but definitely beyond a shadow of a doubt, start off with Facebook. That way I'll be able to get a chance to see your face, you know, see who you are, and, you know, you can see me and my family, and I'm very open on Facebook with my life because I feel like people need to want to, you know, share, you know, in this stuff, and we go through really real things. So I would love that.
So Trust me, it's going to be one of the best Facebook moments you have this week. All right, this is Corby Mitlide. We're on Empower Readings. We're going to be back on the flip side with Greg Milk, talking about adoption, talking about forming families, and talking about making it work brilliantly. In a minute.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg! Ha-ha! I win! Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and ducks.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Empower Readings with Corby Mitlide. Your calls are next at 248-809-3475. 248-809-3475. Empower Readings on Empower Radio, empowerradio.com.
And welcome back to Empower Readings. We are talking tonight with Greg Milk, Juice Meister, Option Mentor, and Papa par excellence to four fabulous kids. So tonight we're discussing the idea of adoption, how to make it work, why it works, why it's important, and if you're coming up between a rock and a hard place, maybe how to smooth things over. So the first thing that I want to talk about is how you deal with life thoughts, how you weave a thread that brings everyone together. It's a patchwork quilt. How do you keep the quilt strong?
You know, I have to say that it's relationship and closeness and intimacy. That's so huge to me, and I'll break each one of those kind of my meaning of each one of those words kind of down. There's I believe that there's a team. Like I'd say this to Isis and the kids. It's like, you know, whose team are you on? And I think that when it comes to wanting to be connected and asking people questions, how close do you want to be in our family relationship? You know, when Imani was 14 or 15 years old, she wanted to be with this boy that was like 19 or 20. And, you know, he's 19 or 20 and it's, you know, it's not, that's not going to work. That's statutory rape there. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, and sadly, and she's okay from it, you know, but she got pregnant and, you know, and we had, I joke and call it a reverse immaculate conception because she actually, the bells and whistles went off that she was pregnant, but they, a molar pregnancy was where the sperm and the egg get together, but their math doesn't figure out. So there's only tissue inside the bag there, the bag. And, but anyway, as we were going through that, and so she, you know, she wasn't pregnant, and we had to get that removed surgically. But my point in bringing all of this up is that there was clearly a direction that she wanted to go that we as a family didn't want to go. And so what we did was we were saying, like, thus as a family, we honored the direction that you want to go. That doesn't involve us. So what this is going to mean is that we're going to honor a decision that you're making, which is going to divide us. This decision that you're making is going to divide us as a family. But I mean, you're going to divide yourself. You are going to do the dividing. It's not us. We have a desire to be close and connected to you. We love you. We want to be close to you. But your choices are going to disable that. And so each one of these things, that, like, that's the relationship thing. And it's not using relationship as a manipulating tool. It's asking you, do you want to participate in that? It's just giving you the choice. I accept your choice. I accept what you want to do, but can you accept what we want to do? And what can, and it, you may be doing and accepting what we want to do from across the street or down the road a ways. And so everything is about relationship when it comes to these children. You know what I'm saying? And accepting each one of them, like, that's another thing too we don't do, is we don't have hard and fast rules for each and every kid, for everybody. Like, everybody has to follow the same rules. It's according to your level of connection and according to your level of trust. Like, I can't trust Caleb, for example, to be in a car seat that doesn't have a lock on it, because he'll take out of the car seat and he'll walk around the car unsafe. You know, so do I lock him in the car seat with a padlock? Yes, I do. Do I lock Kamal in? Nope. Do I lock Trinity in? Nope. Do I lock Imani in? It's all case by case. And just like they taught us at Option, it's really about being present with each and every one. It's starting over with each and every one. You wipe your hands after the incident a minute ago. It didn't happen. It happened. It's over. It's brand new. The mercies are new every morning. You start again with a brand new. And it's how you want to be. I want to be delightful with my kids. I want to be delightful. You know,
I love that phrase. The mercies are new every morning. Mm-hmm. Now that's what I haven't heard, but it's gorgeous. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, it's actually a scripture in Lamentations, in the book of Lamentations, that the prophet, Ezekiel, was talking about. He was, and it's in the end portion of the scripture where he had been like crying and struggling, and he was praying to God. And then he says, "But this one thing I know." He kind of came out of himself for a second. He's, "This one thing I know, that you're good and your mercies endure forever and your mercies are new every morning." So how that applies when you look at how life normally feels challenging. Life feels that way to a lot of people. Would you say, hey, was your life great, or is it you're working on it being good? Most people will say life is hard. And so because of that, you have these challenges that you are, and I call them gym obstacles. You know, I mean, I made a video on Facebook a while ago called Professional Athletes. And a professional athlete is a person that understands, like, for example, I use Gabby Douglas, the world, the gold medalist, the Olympic gold medalist. She does not wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning wondering why she's running 20 miles in soft sand. She's not wondering why she's spending 14 and 15 hour days at this gymnasium on rings and bars and pads. You know what I mean? She's not wondering that because she understands that she is training. Does she have what would be categorized as a hard day? I would say so, but understanding what she's doing, that she's going for this gold medal thing. Now, so I'm not surprised by obstacles. I'm surprised when my life tells me you're going to do 2,000 push-ups. And if God is putting it in front of me to do, then he believes that I can do it. So his mercies are new every morning. You may be at the end of your day, but you're going to go to sleep. And when you wake up, the mercies of God are new every morning. And that's just how it is.
Okay. Now, this rolls me into my next question. Religion is clearly important to you.
Mm-hmm.
I am an inclusion person.
Right.
In that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, any religion that has as its basis love,
mm-hmm.
humility,
mm-hmm.
service,
yeah.
compassion, you're valid.
Right.
You know, Ralph the Wonder Dog, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a very clear, very deep, very vibrant and nurturing place for religion in your family.
Mm-hmm.
How do you blend it into the family without being preachy? It
goes back to relationship again. I'm not a person that's preachy, in my opinion, and I'm sad to say that I have a lot of friends and a lot of brothers and sisters that are crusaders, and they're over the top, and it's they can be very, very too much, and I apologize on their behalf ahead of time. But I don't feel like there's a need to be preachy. Like the way that I personally look at it is I feel like God loves, and I'm just going to use you for an example, just because it's me and you and people that are listening, we'll just talk. Me and you. I just meet you for the first time. I don't know anything about where you're coming from, what you do, or whatever. When I come in contact with you, Corby, I actually believe that God loves you more than I do. He has your vested interest because I believe that he made you, he developed you, and knit you together in your mother's womb with intimate knowledge. He loves you and wants to be close to you. So I'm positive about that. So it's more his responsibility to communicate with you than it is to me. I don't feel like I have to prove that by beating you in the face with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, me trying to get my point across at the expense of God, I think, is insecure. It's as if I'm scared God's not going to get the message across to you. So my job is to just love you. That's it. I am seated stably, and yeah, I'm secure in the fact that God loves me and I love him. So that enables me to pour out what I'm full of. Love.
So in other words, you don't preach religion, you do it.
Correct. I do relationship. Like, and religion actually, the word actually itself bothers me in the sense that it's very, people that are preachy are religious. The people that are preachy and that are over the top and uncomfortable and angry, those people actually are practicing religion. They are not practicing, and I'll tell you the difference. Relationship with God, when you've hung out with the guy, and that's the thing. I'm inclusive too. I just so happen to have an intimate relationship with God. I hear him talk to me. So I'm not going to, and I'm cool with that. I'm plugged in. I have a 3-prong plug that goes right in my navel, and it's the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. I'm plugged into him. So I'm listening to that guy. So having said that, I have a relationship, and I like listening to him and like acting like him according to what he talks to me. Like, he tells me like, yo, this is how I want you to be. So that's relationship. Now, if I unplug the cord, let's just use the analogy. I unplug the cord and walk away, and I just do stuff that I think will make him happy, or I'm doing it in the name of him without having consulted with him. That's religion. You're doing stuff mindless. I don't know why, but you just need to not do this. I don't know why you need to be mad at gay people, but you need to. I don't know why you need to be mad. Like, all that is religion. When you're doing stuff that's void of relationship with the author. God wrote the book and stuff. He initiated the relationship, and you can respond to him. When you respond to him, that's, I act and operate in relationship with him.
I call that the difference between Christianity and churchianity. So, yeah, we're
got it. Thing. That's exactly
okay. The thing. Let's go to the question, what happens when your kids are on opposite sides of the fence? And they're both standing there and looking at you, and, you know, they're the little bulldog faces, and their fists are balled. What do you do?
You know, I it goes again back to relationship. You know, what happened? I listened to this person. I listened to that person. And, you know, well, he took this from me and it was mine. And, you know, I'm pissed off. I'm mad. Okay. I can hear that. Everybody's going to be heard. And I also say this, everybody might not be happy at the end of this. And that's okay. You know, I would love for us to all just continue understand where I'm coming from. I love you, Amani. Do you love your brother? I do love my brothers. You know, Caleb, do you love Amani? I do love her. Okay. Everybody's in love. That's important. So let's hear where this is coming from over here. I hear that as the judge. I hear that. I hear that. Caleb, what about you? Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Well, from where I'm standing, it sounds like blah, blah, blah. It sounds like you misunderstood where he was coming from. And here's another one that we use in our household. Though it costs you all you have, get understanding. Though it costs you all you have, when I say all you have, all that you understand in your brain, all that you, the past experiences, though it costs you all of that money that you've saved up as to who you are today, though it costs you all of it, get understanding. Doesn't say, though it costs you all you have, get understood. It doesn't say that. Don't.
Did anyone ever play the adoption card with you? You know, you love him more because
no,
or you're one in a million.
Well, it's been thrown. It has been thrown. Amani has thrown that, but even as she threw it out there, she herself felt it being wrong. She felt that it was just something that wasn't valid because of the amount of love that we pour. How can you really say that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you and she, I mean, again, and even if she does say it and she believes it, you know, oh, you're only doing that because I'm adopted. Do you really, really in your heart of hearts? I know you're frustrated right now. I know you're mad because we're not going to let you do blah, blah, blah. But do you really, really, when you lay down and close your eyes, believe that that's true? And she'll say no. That card is like the when you play cards, there's the Joker, and then there's all the other playing cards, and then there's like that advertising card that doesn't mean anything. That's that one. It doesn't play. It doesn't work anywhere on the table.
Okay. Now, do you have any thoughts about other folks you know where the adoption hasn't worked as well?
Yeah.
What's the key? And have people come to you and said, our adoption isn't as good as yours looks, are we missing something?
That is a case-by-case basis, although we do have a few people where it doesn't. Like, we know of a person that person is now, they lost their home. This woman lost her home. She adopted this girl, and this girl was very angry. This girl became very angry. She wasn't when they first got her, but she became very angry. A lot of thoughts about her dad started popping up. She started acting out. She got pregnant and not only had a pregnant, a little kid. And after the little kid, then there's boys coming over to the house in the middle of the night. There's those boys are stealing things. She gets put in. I mean, it was a mess. And that happens. That happens, you know, and like I said, they foreclosed on this woman's house to where she now has to rent someplace. I mean, she bought this house before she adopted. So there are stories. And, you know, I'm not saying that story in the sense that a person shouldn't adopt. I want you, and I bet you that person, the woman that we know, she would say like, wow, if you had it to do over again, would you? I believe, even though she's in pain, even though she is a lot more worse off than she was, I believe that she goes back to the original part of her heart where she did that because she wanted to. She wanted to love a child. And that's a question. That's a question I want to ask parents. Is love still love if it's misunderstood or misinterpreted? by the receiver?
What do you think the answer is?
I think it is. I think that love is, like, when I come from a place of, like, I'm going to go get a child, and that child misinterprets my, you know, my expression of love of what I'm doing and stuff, and they don't get it, and they, you suck, you are never my dad, and da-da-da, you don't ever let me, you know, that is no bearing on my expression. I loved because I wanted to, and that's what it was. That was the message that I sent out of my chest toward a person, toward that little girl, toward that little boy, and I felt good doing it. And if they don't receive it, that does not make it. Well, I don't walk and lay down at night and be like, well, maybe I don't love her. Maybe I don't love her. It's not that at all. I don't think so. I think that love, even when misunderstood or misreceived, is still love.
When a parent who has adopted a child comes to you and says, I can't do this anymore, I'm losing it, what do you throw them for a rope so they can hold on?
Yeah, I can't do this anymore. You can't do what? I mean, some people don't know this. When a child is adopted, I'm not talking about a foster child, because there is a difference. A foster child, they're foster kids that kind of come and go in and out of homes. And so they're not permanent. But when you adopt a child, some people do not know this. When you adopt a child, that child, by way of the state, and this is across the America, this is the United States, that child is more yours than the children that you've given birth to.
Why is that?
It's the way the law is. I actually can disown Trinity. I actually can disown Caleb. These are blood children. I actually can, at some point in some age, disown them. I cannot disown Amani, and I cannot disown Kamal. They are more mine than those children. So when a person does say that to me, when a person, and I've heard that before, like, yo, this is really tough. And, you know, I just look at it like, yo, it's almost like you have an arm or a headache. Like, does a person cut their head off when they have a headache? Or do they just deal with it? They have excruciating migraine headaches. You know what I'm saying? And it's, they can't even see, they can't function, they can't go to work, which sounds like this woman that I know that has this situation, you know, that has a, one of the women that has a situation with her adopted child. It's like the child is a migraine headache. And what do you do? You know, what do you do? That's what the thing, I say that. That child is a part of you now. There is no going back. So how can we manage or do, you know, dialogue, or how do we talk or chat about what you believe about what's going on in your life?
And this has been such an hour. There are so many things that people, you know, they see the Anne of Green Gables, they see the White Picket Fence, they see Leave It to Beaver, they see Modern Family, and they think, well, that's adoption.
Yeah.
But the depth, the heart of it that you've been able to discuss with us for the past hour has been really eye-opening. And I hope everybody out there who is either has an adopted child or is thinking of it will go back and re-listen to this conversation again, because I think that it's going to give you some amazing keys.
Yeah. I want to encourage people before you close. I want to encourage people to close their eyes and look down in your chest. Look down in your chest, so to speak. And don't not adopt a child because of fear. Perfect love casts out fear. Don't not adopt. Look down in your chest and in your authentic place. Loving is something that you get to do to these kids. Loving is something you get to do with these children. And that's the encouragement. Go and follow love. Follow the thread of leading love. And, you know, it's a wonderful college. It's a wonderful college of loving. It's a beautiful gift. That's why we named Kamal Matthew, which is perfect in Arabic and gift in Hebrew. I mean, in the Greek. Perfect gift. So back to you, Corby.
Okay. You can find Greg Milk on Facebook. He says that's the first place that he wants you to go find him. And then you can, from there, go to all of his wonderful information on This Is Life Support. If you want to find me, you can also find me on Facebook at Fire Through Spirit. FireThroughSpirit.com is the name of my website, and you can always get me at 877-321-CORBY. Now, next week is going to be our last week as Empower Readings. No, you're not losing me, but there's going to be a whole new format starting on August 1st. There's going to be a new music, finally after 2 years. There's going to be a whole new theme, and we will be starting out with a bang. We will be interviewing the psychic twins, the Jameson twins that have been on Oprah and Ellen and all kinds of interesting programs and are pretty amazing people. We'll be talking to them about the professionalism of being an intuitive counselor. Not how to get a good reading, but how we, as people who work with you, can do it right. So next week we're going to be working with Chris Alexander, who has a new children's book out about angels. And until then, have a great 7 days. We look forward to seeing you then. Have a good one.